Welcome to the Melton Forge Works podcast. I'm going to take you along on my day-to-day adventures in bladesmithing and blacksmithing. I'll be talking about the people involved in the craft and the tools and the methods that go along with it. So thanks for listening. Whoa, what's up? I'm back. Can you believe it? This is going to be episode 69, I think. I don't know. I'm clueless. I have no idea what I spoke about in episode 68. It's been so long since I've made a podcast. I'm almost ashamed to even start up again because it's just been ridiculous how long it's been. But anyway, by popular demand, which means like three of you have asked, where's the podcast? By popular demand, I'm back. I'm going to record an episode. I can't tell you that there's going to be an episode 70 next week. I hope so, but we'll see. Anyway, so, man, it's been a while. What do I want to talk about? I just got back. Well, it's been a week and a half. So, I just got back from Quad State in Ohio, which was an awesome trip. I took off, drove up there. It was like 12 to 13 hours of driving one way. Just an amazing time seeing everybody up there, getting to visit with people that I only get to visit with online. And real quick, shout out to Old Brownie Forge in Kentucky. The dude let me park my truck in his driveway at 2 o'clock in the morning and catch some sleep in the back of my truck. So I appreciate that. Thank you for letting me hang out in your driveway for a minute. And I was able to deliver a couple of swage blocks to him, which was pretty cool. So anyway, that's how I made the trip. I drove until I was so tired I couldn't drive anymore. And then I've got a camper shell on the back of the truck. And I had a cot and a sleeping bag and a nice little camping setup back there. So I just pulled into his driveway at like 2 o'clock in the morning, crawled in the back, caught about 4 or 5 hours of sleep, and then got up the next morning and finished the drive into Troy, Ohio. I got there around 12:30 or 1 or so. I got there like 30 minutes or so after Cole Iron debuted their power hammer, which I was really kind of, I hated that I wasn't there for the big reveal, but I did get to play with it later. So anyway, I'll talk more about that in a few minutes. But I got to Quad State. I found some friends and a good place to park the truck. I was able to park the truck by the Brazil Nut gang, Mark Ling and Andrew Larson and Ed Brazil and Rob Huff, and just had a great time just hanging out with people, you know. I took 48 swage blocks with me, about half of each kind, to try to sell up there in Ohio. And I brought the V2 swage block to market since I've recorded a podcast. So if you keep up with me at all, you're aware of that, the second version of my little mini swage. So I brought a bunch of those with me to Ohio, and I didn't sell out. That would have been awesome to have sold out, but I sold about half of what I brought. So it made the trip well worth the expense. And because I was able to sleep and camp in the truck on site, my expenses to get to Ohio were basically just a few tanks of gas, which wasn't that bad. I brought some camp food with me, and kind of cooked my own food and ate there. I purchased a Honda CT125 motorcycle this year, a little Honda Trail, they're called. And I've got a hitch mount that goes on the back of my truck. And so I took that with me to Quad State. And so I got there and I rolled the tailgate down, pulled my swage blocks to the back of the tailgate, and unloaded the bike. And so basically I was able to leave my truck parked in the tailgate area and just take my little motorcycle and drive all over the place. And I drove all over the fairgrounds. I drove a little bit around Troy, Ohio. I had a blast taking that motorcycle with me. That was really the way to go. And it was interesting when I got there to see how many other people had little motorcycles, pit bikes, golf carts. Michael Hoops was on his one wheel. You know, it seemed to kind of be a thing for people to bring alternate modes of transportation to Quad States. So I was really happy I brought the little motorcycle with me. That was just a ton of fun. But Quad State, you know, I did sell some stuff, but I also got to see so many tools for sale there. And I was really good this time. You know, a lot of times I'll buy an anvil or tools I don't really need just because they're cool and I like them. This time, the only thing I bought at Quad State was a pack of green shop rags. That was it. I didn't buy any anvils. I didn't buy anything else. I used these green hospital towels quite a bit in the shop, and I was able to pick up a couple of bundles of those, and that was it. That's all I brought back from Quad State besides a bunch of memories and pictures and good times. So I was able to hang out with the Coal Iron guys a little while. I got to see their new power hammer, the 37-pound self-contained. They just put out a podcast recently talking about their experience with the hammer. And my experience lines up with what they said in their podcast. I felt like, you know, when I was running that hammer, I felt like it had more room to go on the bottom end. And so it felt like the treadle wasn't going down far enough. You know, it's like you'd press the treadle down and then you'd get to the bottom of the travel of the treadle and it just felt like it needed a little bit more. It felt like if I could push the treadle down like another inch or so, then it would give all it had. And it turns out there were some adjustments that were made to the hammer, like right before they brought it there, and they were still figuring some things out. And they talk about that at length in their podcast, that they realized that the hammer's performance wasn't quite where they wanted it to be. But I think it was a really smart idea for them to bring that hammer to Quad State to get feedback. To let people use it and tell them what they liked, what they didn't like, you know, what problems they saw with it. The thing has massive potential, and I really like the size of it. It felt like it had the die space of like an Anyang 55 with, you know, the RAM weight of like an Anyang 33, you know, so it's got a little bit heavier RAM weight than a 33. It's a 37, but the Anyang 33s have real tiny dies, like super tiny dies, and they cycle at a super high rate. So I had a 33 for a while, and it just ran like a sewing machine, you know, just super, super fast. And part of the reason that mine ran so fast was that I had an incorrect size flywheel, and eventually I got a larger flywheel for mine, and it slowed it down and it made it a lot more controllable. But their hammer, the 37 Coal Iron hammer, was running at a rate I thought was really useful, meaning once they get everything dialed in, I think you're going to be able to do really good single blows with that hammer, and it's not running at such a fast pace that you're not going to be able to control it, which is my primary complaint with the Anyang 33s, is that they're a little hard to control because they run so fast. And so I've had an Anyang 33, I've had all kinds of different tire hammers. I think I've had a total of 5 different tire hammers now. And then I've got the Anyang 88 in the shop, which is, they call it a 106 now, same exact hammer. But anyway, after having used the hammers that I've used and used Little Giants and other places, I can really see a lot of potential for this 37-pound coal iron. I think they're super, super close to having it completely dialed in, buttoned up, and ready to go. And I heard they're taking it to Maker Camp in New York this weekend, so they'll get even more feedback up there. And I would imagine really soon they're going to have the thing dialed in and pushed out. So anyway, it was awesome to get to play with that and to see it and to see their kind of take on it. I think it's going to be really cool. They also had an induction machine with them on site. And oh man, since I've recorded a podcast, I now have one of their induction machines in my shop. So I did a demonstration for the Alabama Forge Council a few weeks before going to Quad State. And I guess I'll tell the story about all that too while I'm at it. Kind of wrap up the Quad State talk. Quad State was great. I loved it. It was awesome getting to hang with everybody. I wound up leaving kind of right in the middle of the Forge competition Saturday night so that I could make it back into Mississippi and have a short visit with my daughter at her college in the northern part of the state of Mississippi. So I had to leave in order to make that kind of schedule. But again, super awesome trip. I will absolutely be going back every time I can. It is quite a haul for me, but it was definitely worth it. So anyway, a couple of weeks before Quad State, I was one of the demonstrators for the Alabama Forge Council Fall Conference over at Tannehill Ironworks in McCalla, Alabama, which is not far from Tuscaloosa. And it's a beautiful state park. I've been going there for years for the Batson Bladesmithing Conference. And I'm pretty sure I've talked about that on the podcast in the past. But so they have the Batson Bladesmith thing in the spring over there. And then in the fall, they have more of a blacksmith-centered conference. And so I was one of the demonstrators for the fall conference this year. And when I was trying to work out what I was going to do or what I was going to demonstrate, I just thought it would be interesting to kind of just show the little small things that I make on a daily and weekly basis for my web store. You know, the things I make fairly quickly using induction heat and tire hammers and whatnot, things that I can make pretty quickly and turn them around and ship them out. And I thought, wouldn't it be cool to kind of show my process for how I make these little quick items using induction? And so I was trying to figure out how I was going to take my induction machine over to Alabama. And so I reached out. I thought, man, this might be a good idea for the coal iron guys to come down and show off their machine, because just a few weeks or month or two before this Alabama conference, Coal Iron had come out with their version of the 15-kilowatt induction machine. And so I contacted them and I said, hey, you know, I'm going to be a demonstrator over in Alabama. Would you guys like to come and be a vendor at this event and bring one of your induction machines, and I'll use it, and it'll be a win-win. I won't have to carry my machine over there. You know, I won't have to unplug it, drain it, carry it over there, and all that kind of stuff. And you guys can come and, you know, bring some of your stuff, show off your stuff at this conference, and you know, it would kind of be a win-win, I thought. And so they were all about it, you know, and they were really excited. Except they couldn't come. They couldn't make the trip down. There was a schedule conflict, and they couldn't come. But they immediately said, what if we ship you one of our induction machines, and you can take it over there and demonstrate with it, you know? And which was just an unbelievably gracious and amazing offer. And so I thought that was awesome. So, of course, I said yes to that. And they actually sent the machine 2 weeks ahead of the conference. And so I was able to set it up in my shop, get to use it, learn how it works you know, learn the differences between it and the machine that I've been using for a while. And then I was able to carry it over to Alabama, and I use it there. And it was a big hit at the conference. A lot of people got to play with it. I had a lot of people come up and ask me all kinds of questions about it, and just about induction forging in general. I wasn't the first person to do induction forging at the Alabama Forge Conference. I think John Taylor had done it in the past. But I was definitely the first one to show the kind of forging I was doing with it. And obviously I was the first person to bring a coal iron induction machine out to demonstrate, you know, to an event like that. So anyway, it was really great. It worked out well. You know, the fact that it got to my house a couple of weeks in advance let me understand how to unpack it and repack it. And one of the really great things about their machine, one of the huge selling points, I think, for their machine is it is ridiculously easy to set up. So with the DIY induction machine that I've been using for a while, when you buy one of those machines, you kind of have to assemble the whole system yourself. You got to buy the machine, you got to buy the water cooler separately, you've got to plumb them together, you've got to figure out your wiring, you got to clean up the wiring on the back of the machine. You know, you got to get a cart, you know, you got to put it all together. And so there's a good bit of setup you have to do for kind of the DIY rig. Well, with the induction machine from Coal Iron, it comes in a wooden crate. You unscrew the crate. The induction machine is strapped to the cabinet, which is the water chiller. And so you cut the strap. You stand up the induction machine on top of the water chiller cabinet, which is basically the roll-around stand for the whole setup. You connect the water hoses. Actually, the water hoses were already connected. You stand the machine up. You plug it into the wall using a 220 50-amp plug, which in my case, the coal iron machine came with a plug that matched the plug that my welder used, which was a NEMA 650 plug, pretty standard welding plug. So I was able to just plug it straight in the wall. I didn't have to do any wiring to it at all. All the wiring was already done. I filled it full of, I think, around 6 gallons of distilled water. And then I had to connect the foot pedal, which is one little connection on the front. And then I had to screw on the coil, you know, the coil that it came with. And that was it. And then I turned the machine on and I was forging with it. And so, you know, from the time I got the machine to pressing the pedal and heating steel with that coal iron crate, you know, and everything, it was like 15 minutes. It was just super fast. And on the back of their water chiller cabinet, they have a drain. Like, they have a really handy drain. And so when I got ready to go to Alabama, I set a 5-gallon bucket underneath the drain and just turned the handle, drained out the 6 gallons of distilled water into a 5-gallon bucket. I filled it up as full as I could. I put a lid on the bucket, and then I loaded the machine in the back of my truck and carried it to Alabama. And then when I got to Alabama, all I had to do was unload the machine, pour the water from the bucket, and then plug it up, and I was ready to go. And so it was so much easier to carry that machine around than it would have been for me to carry my machine. So anyway, I've been using that machine since Alabama, since the Forge Council or the Forge Conference over there. And it's worked extremely well. It's got a thermostat controlled water chiller on it so that you can set the water temperature that you want it to stay at. And, you know, it'll just kick on this refrigerated cooling system. And as the water temperature rises from you using the machine, it'll cool it down really, really rapidly. And so the other major benefit out of the coal iron machine over the other DIY rigs is that it, with that water chiller, it gives you a 100% duty cycle. So you can't really outwork the cooling system. So on my DIY machine, I've been able to outwork the cooling system a few times. And so anyway, I think these are great machines. I think for like production shops that want to use induction, this is like the choice. You know, it's just the way to go. If you're a teaching school, you know, where you're going to have bladesmith students in there and you're going to be running it all the time and you don't want any downtime, you want that 100% duty cycle, this is the machine for you. So anyway, I've got it set up in my shop now. Obviously, that gives me two induction machines, which is crazy cool because now I can have two different kinds of coils set up so that I don't have to change coils quite as much, which allows me, as I'm forging through a piece, if that piece I'm working gets stretched out and is too large for the coil that I started in, then I can have my other machine set up with a coil that's appropriate for the size that it becomes, if that makes sense. So I've still been experimenting with what a good combination of two coils is for most of the work I do, but I'm really excited to see how that's going to increase, you know, speed and efficiency in the shop. But the Alabama Forge Council was amazing. It was a good time. Lots of people came. I had a great time at that one too. So just in the past month or so, I've done the Alabama Forge Council, and then I've done the Quad State trip. And so got to see so many people in the past month or so, which also means that I haven't done a whole lot in the shop. So just to update you, before I kind of wrap this up and make it so that this episode is not inordinately long, I'll just give you a shop update here at the end of the episode. Because I've been away from the shop, I've kind of shut down my web store for the past few weeks for the most part, and I've not been, you know, allowing a lot of orders to come in outside of the swage blocks. And I still have those available. If you're listening to this and you want a V1 or a V2 mini swage, they're available on the website at meltonforgeworks.com or derekmelton.com. Go get you one. I'll ship it to you. Anyway, so the shop was kind of in a wreck, you know, with all the prep that I had to do for Alabama and, you know, getting things ready to travel to Ohio. So when I got back from Ohio, I took a few days and just didn't do anything. I didn't go in the shop. I didn't make anything. I didn't clean anything up. But eventually I got back out there, and a few months ago I sold one of my treadle hammers. I had two of the inline treadle hammers, and I sold one of them. And so I had this gap between my tire hammers. Because in the past I had a tire hammer, a treadle hammer, and a tire hammer lined up in one part of my shop. And so I sold that treadle hammer, and so I needed to move the other one into place. But I got to looking at my shop layout, and I decided to take some time and rearrange some things. So I moved the treadle hammer to a different location. I moved my third tire hammer, which I've had sitting in a corner for a year, unused. I moved it into place. And so I was able to do a good bit of rearranging, and I made a new set of dies for that new tire hammer. So in the end, I've got three tire hammers now set up, with each one of them having a different set of dies. I've got my treadle hammer set up and bolted down. I went and bought a hammer drill and drilled a bunch of holes in the floor and bolted a bunch of tools down that weren't bolted down before. So as crazy as it sounds, I didn't have my post vise bolted down in the shop. I had heavy steel on the base, just kind of holding it in place. But now I've got it bolted down, my anvil's bolted down, all the tire hammers are bolted down, the treadle hammer's bolted down, and they're all in kind of different locations than they were, or different configurations. And so just a couple of days ago, I took a piece of A33 Flutagon steel that I got from Paul Beisler, and I took some time and forged out a ball peen in the new shop configuration, and I really like it. I like it a lot. I was able to kind of march down the line of the tire hammers, and I was able to use all the tools. I used the Anyang 88, I used the hydraulic press, I used all three tire hammers, and I used the treadle hammer in the making of that one ball peen hammer. And so by having die sets in each one of those tools set up, I was able to march through a ball peen in about an hour, I think, pretty quickly. And I think I can make it even faster than that once I go through it a few times. But I really, really like the new shop setup. Oh, and I got a new forge. So, I've been partnering with Charles at Atlas Knife and Tool to help me get the swage blocks cast. They get cast at the same time in the same foundry that he uses for all of his anvils. And so when I got the last batch of swage blocks from him, he also sent me one of his little Atlas knife maker forges. It's the slightly larger version called the Atlas Plus. And so that's a new tool in the shop as well, since I've spoken to you all last. And so I used it to forge out the ball peen. And it has a fairly small chamber, but that means it's really efficient. And so it's a really small, super hot chamber, which is perfect for the small hammers I like to make. So anyway, long story short, and to wrap all this up, my shop has got a new configuration and it's fairly clean now. So I feel like I'm just about ready to go to work for the upcoming holiday season. And as I record this podcast, it is October the 7th, and the fall holiday rush is about to begin. It does every year between, mid-October to December. It's pretty busy in the shop, and so I'm looking forward to seeing how I can use the new tools and the new shop and the new induction machine to really kind of speed things up for the current holiday season. So anyway, I'm going to wrap it up. I'm going to let this be the end of the podcast. Thank you for coming back to listen again. I am going to try to be more consistent with my podcast. It's something I enjoy putting out there. It gives me somebody to talk to. And thanks for all the feedback and the follows and interactions. I really, really do appreciate it. And I'll see you next time. Bye.